I'd like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, March 12, 2009.
Hello.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Item number one on the agenda has been delayed, canceled, postponed. That's a better way. So we'll begin with item number two on the agenda, which is to hear a presentation on the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, better known as the stimulus package, I'm assuming, right?
That's right. The stimulus, Mayor.
Which version, yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Brady and Mr. Stoddard, the floor is yours.
Yeah. Thank you. Mayor, Council, we were before you actually about a month ago today to talk about...
I said Mr. Brady and Mr. Stoddard. I meant Mr. Butler and Mr. Stoddard.
I've been called much worse, Mayor. So I'll need a little stimulus after that comment as well. So.
I'm trying to think what word you could use that would be worse.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be boring.
Go ahead, Scott.
Thank you. I'll just stick to that since there's a lot of Scotts around here. Mayor, Council, we were before you about a month ago talking about our federal program, and at that time the stimulus package had not been approved by Congress. Now, a month later, there's still a lot of question marks and still a lot yet to be determined, but we wanted to come before you, provide an update of where we are right now and how we're going about going through the stimulus program internally, seeing how we can maximize the return to the residents of Mesa, and answer any questions that you may have. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Stoddard, who will start us off.
Just quickly on the stimulus, just some numbers. The full package ended up being $787 billion. It was broken up into two parts, $212 billion in tax relief, $575 billion in new spending. The bill was signed into law only hours before the president visited Mesa in Denver, Colorado on February 17th. This amount of money, the $787 billion, is the largest one-time domestic spending bill program. No time in the history of our nation will as much money been spent as in so few a days. In fact, they estimate that 75% of the stimulus should be spent by the third quarter of 2010. So. It's projected from the White House to create or save 3.5 million jobs. And in Arizona, they estimated 70,000 jobs would be created or saved. And in the districts that encompass Mesa, District 5, 8,300 jobs. And in District 6, 10,200 jobs.
We're talking congressional districts.
Congressional districts. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, not just city council districts.
No. No East Mesa bias in that, so. even though some on council have advocated for that.
No, we wouldn't want to get into an East Side, West Side discussion relating to stimulus money now, would we?
No, we wouldn't, Mayor.
That never turns out well, does it?
There are two main approaches to how Congress has decided to divvy up the money. The first is through typical formula allocations, normal programs that already exist today where they're just infusing additional money into those programs. Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, which you all are familiar with, is one example. They're simply taking a pot of stimulus money and applying it to CDBG, and it will then flow down ultimately to the cities in the same manner that it does, in the same formula breakdown that it does today. There's a lot of programs throughout stimulus where that's the way they've chosen to distribute it, by just taking a lump sum of money and applying it to an existing program so it will trickle down in the way it currently does. Competitive grants are some of the ones we also hear the most about, where it'll be discretionary or competitive through the different federal departments. The city's going to closely monitor these right now. We're working with the departments. We're going to go through our internal process in just a moment, but we're closely monitoring the websites of each of the different agencies. They are responsible ultimately for making their own criteria in many cases, posting that online so that potential applicants like cities or states will know exactly what the criteria is for the program, how you apply, what the application timeline is, And of course, those are going to be subjective, discretionary grants that they'll weigh certain criteria in before deciding how to fund those programs. We gave a few examples that many of you are familiar with. One is the COPS hiring grant that adds additional public safety personnel. That is distributed on a competitive nature. Firefighter assistance grants. This actually goes for the construction of fire stations, construction and renovation of fire stations. There's only $215 million for the entire country in that pot of money, with a cap of $15 million per entity, whether that's the city or a fire district, with a cap of $15 million. We've heard actually that they will probably look to have a much lower cap than that in the future, so that the money spreads around as far and wide as possible. But that's another example of a competitive process where we will have to apply and we'll be competing against cities or fire districts from across the country.
Hey, Scott, yes. If you could, on that competitive, I mean, I get this vision, and one thing has played out, and certainly in our area, of a bunch of lobbyists camped on the doors of agencies and everything on these competitive grants. Maybe you could, and I know that happens. We know that happens. We use it to our advantage when we can. But, I mean, are we going to be in a situation here where those cities and those states with the biggest lobbying groups and everything, and those that have money to send just armies of people back to Washington to camp on the doorsteps, are going to get money, and the rest of the thousands of cities and towns and everything are going to sort of be left at the wayside? Or how do you envision this going on? And maybe shed a little light on that.
Certainly, Mayor. I think there's going to be a lot of communication between the different applicants and the departments trying to understand what the best way to structure an application may be, what types of criteria the department's going to focus on. Certainly, we know that there has been discussion here in Arizona about attempts to go back to D.C. and, as you said, stay camped out on the doorsteps. We think that certainly with the flow of information that's coming out of D.C., the amount of interest that's on this, and also the transparency and the accountability that's called for in the program, we haven't seen that enacted yet, but we're hopeful that that will really, you know, provide some sunshine on the process, that we think that our programs are going to be competitive, whether it's fire station construction, whatever the case may be. So what we hope to do, and what our federal representatives hope to do, is just garner the best information that we can, get it back to our departments, and let our departments and city management make the best decision about whether the program is something that is reasonable for the city of Mesa to try to pursue.
So we're hoping that the federal agency, in the transparency you're talking about, will set out the standards. They'll take the applications in. They'll shut the doors to those who are standing in their lobby screaming and yelling the loudest, and they'll actually, they've promised at least, to look at these applications and these requests on their merits and do it accordingly. That's what we're hoping for.
That's what we're hoping for. And we've already seen...
Not that that's the only effort. We're not just going to throw something in the hopper and hope that we're going to use whatever information, whatever benefits that we have, because we do, you know, we talk to our congressmen, we talk to our representatives in Washington, things like that. But you're saying that they're at least on the surface, they've set up rules that hopefully would overcome to a large degree that and judge things on their merit and attempt to, like you said, divvy things out, spread them out as far as possible.
Mayor, we're very hopeful of that. Certainly, we think we have some great programs that would compete very well if it's just merit-based. So we're hopeful that that will be the process.
Okay.
And we've already seen some instances already, and I know you've mentioned this, Mayor, of where subjective criteria, though, from the departments is something that's going to be out of our control. We've certainly felt that Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport would be high on the list of potential stimulus dollars coming out of the FAA. Unfortunately, though, instead of looking at setting a criteria of what type of projects at the airports could benefit economic development, the FAA chose to focus on safety. Not that safety is not very important, but we thought for stimulus dollars and stimulating the economy that maybe there'd be a different criteria. And unfortunately, some of the safety, Phoenix Mesa Gateway's done such a good job of staying on top of the safety issues, and we really don't have any outstanding projects at this moment. The economic development projects that we put forward, additional taxiways, some drainage, some of those things that help expand the ability of the airport to do business and expand economic development on the airport didn't fare well, and that's unfortunate. We're still hopeful that the FAA will make that up to us through the normal process, but it's disappointing that stimulus dollars couldn't be applied to some
of the
projects.
And I think that you bring up a good point, like with the safety. Those who have done a really good job actually,
yes.
I don't want to say get punished. So
or at a disadvantage.
I'm going to get, it's going to be headlines tomorrow, get punished. No, but they're at a disadvantage in many ways because in some things like that, they made that, FAA made that decision to catch up airports that were deficient in their safety areas. Noble cause, I agree with that, but in a sense, we end up on the short end of the stick because we, Phoenix Mesa Gateway has done a great job in staying on top of their safety issues and putting those as a top priority. So in this particular process, the stimulus, they're at a disadvantage because of the decision that's made. And I don't think that'll be the last time that that happens as we go back, because especially we're competing with a lot of areas, and this is true across the board, where they have older infrastructure, where they haven't kept up, where they need an infusion of capital and to maybe catch up for years and years of age and lack of maintenance, whatever it is, that's going to create a situation where they're going to go after possibly those kind of things first, rather than areas like Phoenix Mesa Gateway or other areas we have.
Absolutely, that's going to be one of the more challenging aspects of the competitive program, is trying to figure out the criteria and what are the departments really looking for. We mentioned this on the firefighter assistance grants, but even though it's been billed as money for new construction, what we've heard coming out of D.C. is that actually the priority is going to be given to renovations to existing fire
which
stations.
Which is the equivalent of the safety issue I just talked about.
Exactly.
So someone who has not kept up and needs to renovate stations might be in priority for areas that are lacking in service that would actually most benefit from a new station.
And if you're probably, and Mayor, if you're a larger urban eastern city that's not growing like we are in this area, you're probably back there encouraging renovations instead of new construction because you don't have the same needs that we have in a rapidly growing area like Arizona. Right. So. The good news is some of the money is already starting to flow. We've received notification that several pots of money and what the allocation will be to the city of Mesa on CDBG will get an additional $919,000, and that will supplement the CDBG allocation that we would normally have coming in. So we'll be able to get more money out to our community partners through that effort. Homelessness prevention, emergency shelter grant dollars that come into our community and go to organizations like A New Leaf, that will be about $1.4 million from stimulus. Energy efficiency and conservation block grants. This is actually a new federal program that was created in 2007 to go to communities, kind of energy efficiency CDBG program. There's wide latitude, but the idea is to improve energy conservation within our municipalities. That money right now, the estimate we've heard at this time, it could change slightly, but is right at $3.4 million that will be coming directly to the city of Mesa that we can use on energy conservation projects.
Councilmember Higgins.
Scott, on that issue, are there guidelines to what what energy efficiency means and what's going to be covered and those type of things?
Yeah, I'm not sure if Scott Boucher is here. Scott's been taking a close look at this for us.
Good morning, Mayor, Councilmember Higgins. There are guidelines on what can be used for this grant. Basically, it's looking at energy efficiency, conservation of energy, and also really looking at the reduction of the use of fossil fuels in reducing carbon footprints. Excuse me. That can be done in several different ways, either by using renewable energy sources or by using the energy that we have more efficiently. So really, those are the basic guidelines that they have. We haven't got a lot of detail out of it yet, but we're going to try and focus on really reducing our use of energy at our municipal facilities.
So I give some examples, like, you know, encouraging solar utilization in buildings, weatherization. Do you have some examples, maybe?
Right.
Just to tag on, this is municipal facilities, or this is neighborhoods?
It can be used for both. It can be used for neighborhoods, or it can also be used for municipal facilities. Examples would be the use of solar energy, also would be weatherization-type projects. Those things kind of go hand in hand. Weatherization makes a building more energy efficient because you use less energy by doing that weatherization. So they can go hand in hand. Those could be for city facilities. It could also include a city facility may be a streetlight, because streetlights do use energy. So that's one of the things that's actually called out is more efficient use of transportation energy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
JAG dollars have also, those are justice assistance grants that go to the public safety community that we can use for projects around the city. $1.2 million has been allocated for that. Also, regional authorities are starting to make their decisions. Yesterday, this isn't a final number because it hasn't gone through the MAG Regional Council yet, but the MAG Management Committee, of which the city manager sits on, started to divvy up the regional street dollars that are flowing into Maricopa County. And it appears, if this holds through the final decision, that Mesa will get just under $11 million to supplement our street program.
Scott, let's make sure people understand this is a different... I guess it is a different pot of money than the highway money.
Yes.
That was discussed last week and the week before that went through ADOT.
That's right. MAG received two different pots of money for surface transportation. One was for highways, and that, as the mayor alluded to, we discussed, or the mayor discussed.
Well, let's be clear. MAG did not receive that. The state did.
Yes, that's
MAG
right.
MAG gave a recommendation. Does how ADOT used that money, how the state used that money. This actually came to MAG, and that's why I say it's a different pot of money.
That's correct.
Important difference.
Very important distinction. You're right, Mayor. What we see, too, is that really the local communities, to your point, have the ultimate say over how this pot of money is divvied up. So even though it runs back up through the State Transportation Board just for ratification, they can't change the formula. The formula was set at the federal level. And as we talked about the highway dollars that came into the state of Arizona, the ADOT board actually had the discretion and the ability to change the actual formula. But we know that the dollar amount for Maricopa County is locked in place by the federal government and can't be changed by ADOT.
You lost me and everyone else.
Yeah.
Really, you had two checks that were cut.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the stimulus package. You had one check that goes to the states,
mm-hmm.
and you had one check that goes to the locals,
mm-hmm.
and to the local organizations. And our regional organization is MAG, Maricopa mm-hmm. Association of Governments. We talk about it as though they're both stimulus monies, but we talk about it as though those are both the same because MAG got involved in both of them.
Right.
But in the first check that was cut to the state, MAG made a recommendation mm-hmm. and said, here's how we would like you to spend the money that has gone to you, State of Arizona, within Maricopa County. And that was the recommendation on the highway funds. Is that correct?
Correct.
The second one actually it goes directly to the local cities, or in our case, goes to MAG, and that's what this $10.8 million represents.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
Okay. Councilmember Fenton.
Yes. You mentioned the $11 million mm-hmm. to transportation projects. In general terms, Mr. City Manager, what would we envision that being utilized in Mesa? Nothing specific, but how would that be used?
What's interesting about these funds, they would allow us to supplement what we use for our street maintenance program. So last year we spent, what did we cite, Jack, $12, $14 million in street
projects?
Well
over $14
million. $14 million, and so this would be a supplement to that. Dan, is that
right? And Mayor and Council, we've identified about $43 million in needs for road reconstruction for our arterial and collector streets. That's what we submitted in our initial package. for the stimulus project.
Well, let's define what maintenance is so we get more detail. This potholes or resurfacing or reconstruction or what?
Remove and replace.
Okay.
So not widening projects, just removing and replacing
take
the
out
existing
the
asphalt.
In correct. Simple terms, take out the asphalt, put new ones in so that we extend the life of the road.
That's correct, ma'am.
Or bring it up to standard.
Yes.
Thereby doing both. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And in addition to the actual street dollars, we do expect some transit dollars to flow into the city. That amount has not been determined yet. The Phoenix Mesa urbanized area, as the Federal Transit Administration designates this area, was the recipient of $65 million that will then be divvied up within the region. So that's still happening at RPTA.
Okay, we're going to talk basic here now because
yeah,
we're okay. Throwing out all these terms.
Uh-huh.
The money we were talking about before goes to streets.
Yes.
And that's what we call transportation.
Right.
The money you're talking about, transit, would be public transportation.
That's correct.
Buses,
light rail,
those kind of things.
That's correct, okay. Mayor.
And that could include not just buses, but it includes costs related to that. Shelters, stops, those kind of things. Parking lots.
And
right?
That's correct, Mayor. Okay. In fact, I believe that stimulus actually precluded the purchase of buses from being an eligible.
So when we talk transit, I mean, because I know there was some discussion, we talked transit, it can actually include, and I think there was one thing that I read somewhere on questions on shade mm-hmm. for bus stops and things like that. That would be included in transit.
That's right, Mayor. They would like to focus on capital facilities, so park and ride lots, shade canopies at park and rides, other types
of bus pullouts,
kind of capital okay. facilities such as that. That's one-time spending instead of creating
an ongoing
obligation. Probably would be eligible, Mayor. Yes.
Okay. Like we talked about earlier, there's such a short turnaround of time on some of these projects that there's a distinct advantage to those entities that are well organized, and so we wanted to walk you through our city internal process of what we've done and what we are doing to take advantage of the opportunities that are out there. Attached to your agenda, you had the city's matrix of programs. The city manager's office went through the entire stimulus package and identified those programs coming through the federal agencies that we believe city departments may have an opportunity to be eligible for. And we distributed that to each of the city departments. The departments now have the responsibility of going through this matrix, looking at the programs, and then what they will do is they will go to the federal agency's website, whether that's the Department of Labor or the EPA or the Department of Justice, and on each of those federal agencies' homepages, on the front page they have a direct link to the implementation guidelines that their agency is using for the stimulus dollars. And so the department then will really get into the nitty-gritty details of how this is administered, what the criteria is, what the methodology is. And with that information, we've asked each of the departments to fill out a project information sheet, giving us the information about what the program is, how much it's going to cost, what the jobs are that are created, is there any long-term obligation that the city has by entering into these, by going after these stimulus monies. We will collect those information sheets, and eventually the city manager will have to approve all of these projects that before they are actually applied for, so that we have a centralized place. We know what the city's going after. To the credit of the departments, they've from the very beginning have been getting their projects in line, getting the information ready so that they could act quickly. And as Mr. Butler mentioned, we feel like we're in a good position to take advantage of as many opportunities that are out there to act quickly.
Great.
Yeah, go ahead. Mayor and Council, just also, and I think we've given you a link to this, and we can certainly make copies. One of the major resources we're using is this document here. It's 121 pages
yeah.
of a attempt to summarize the different stimulus opportunities that are in there. You'll notice that on the matrix that it has an agency, the federal agency, the program, the allocation method, the eligible applicants, the city department that we've designated, at least defined right now, and then there's a page number. That refers to this document here, which leads the department to go look at a very short summary of the project, and then if they believe that that really is a project that we may be needing to pursue, then they would go to online to that federal agency's homepage, and they will find the guidelines. So that's kind of our process right now. We're trying to track to make sure that we are diligently pursuing every opportunity. It's interesting, we are finding, though, our departments are finding out through other resources to their professional organizations where we may be looking for example, in the fire department, looking for programs that may benefit the fire department, whether it's equipment or whether it's even personnel. And we would typically go through the Homeland Security, FEMA websites to find something like that. Well, lo and behold, there's actually some programs in the Department of Education's federal agency's program. So we have to be very diligent about pursuing that. So we are really pushing the departments, and they're doing a good job of following up on looking through every opportunity. Now, I caution, one of the things that we are very diligent about is really trying to understand those strings that get attached to federal dollars and the commitments that may linger beyond the initial receipt of the grant. So what that is part of the effort of doing this documentation is making sure we're asking all the right questions as part of the application process, is what commitment does the city have to the program? For example, it may be funded at 100% for the first couple, 2 or 3 years. The question then is beyond that, what other obligations does the city incur to the commitments that occur to that same program beyond that, that then we would be responsible for financially? So those are things that we have to really balance out. Now, and that some of those are, there's some critical programs that maybe we could just get a briefing. I know it's, you have to excuse us just a little bit because some of these are moving targets, but I would like maybe some of the departments to come up and tell us a little bit about some of the programs we're already aware of and how that may play out, because you're going to hear about those. And maybe we could have, Johan, why don't you come forward and talk a little bit about the program that you're applying for. And George, I don't know if who from your office maybe also could talk about, because you've got a lot of programs coming up. And then Scott, maybe there's some examples you want to give. Who else?
Do you want Catherine to come up?
Oh, and Catherine.
Okay, while they're walking up, I think Councilmember Summers has a question. Okay.
Well, I think it's probably going to be answered because I see George walking up. One of the issues that you had mentioned was we have to watch what the strings are and the ongoing costs of those programs. I think there's a difference, though, that we have to look at between new obligations, things the city perhaps has not done in the past. We don't want to get stuck in ongoing high costs of operation and maintenance, mm-hmm. or things like funding for new police officers, which is a fundamental service of the city. We do have to be careful with the budget, but I'm interested, Chief, to know more about the COPS program, because I was looking at this yesterday and realized the deadline is the 2nd of April. Read it correctly?
Our internal deadline is April the 3rd. The COPS program is the actual deadline for the federal government is April 14th. That is a really fast-moving target. We believe that to some extent it's going to be first come, first first served. It is competitive. So, you know, we have to certainly work in how we package our application. But there's about $1 billion there to hire police officers. And the way that we understand the grant today, it will be the federal government will pay for the first 3 years at the top level of an entry-level police officer, salary and benefits. The department would have, or the city would have to pay the equipment that associated with that. And then there would be an obligation for the city to maintain those employees for at least an additional year. We're looking at, and we wanted to get some direction from council today because we really don't have a lot of time. But we would like to apply for 100 officers. Most of this will be community-based policing efforts. We're looking at putting more people in our schools, putting additional officers working problem-solving and foot beats and some other similar activities. The funding, the impact on funding to the city, and these are approximate numbers, it would be somewhere between $8 and $10 million for a four-year cycle. That really most of it will be due on payroll in the fourth year, or the city could certainly elect to amortize that over a four-year period. But it would take approximately about $1.5 million to $2 million in the first year to hire and equip the officers. then the cost will come down significantly because the federal government's picking up the salary. And then in the fourth year, obviously, the city will be completely liable for salary and benefits. So it's somewhere between $8 and $10 million. But this would be 100 police officers. Quite frankly, it would be a tremendous savings to the city. The question obviously would become, is the city prepared then to incur that continued liability beyond the third year? This is a city that is very under-policed. And although we're doing extremely well on the area of Part 1 crimes, that's just really basic policing. But we really have a lot of other issues that we're not attending to. We have a significant drug problem in our high schools that, quite frankly, in the years to come, it can create some very troubling trends for the quality of life of the city. We're not engaging in what I would call wholesale policing as much, which is where we have high level of police contact in public places with a lot of people. We're doing more of the retail policing, which means we're handling the radio call and the individual incidents. And in order to get us to the next level of policing, we really have to have more people on board. So I think that this could be a very good opportunity for the city to get the seed money to get the police department to a size comparable to other cities around the country that are similarly situated to us. But obviously there is a liability that has to be understood, and we're trying to make that very clear. But I think it could be a tremendous investment and a tremendous opportunity for the city.
You had mentioned something earlier. My wife, who teaches in one of the schools, said that they're looking at their resource officers potentially going away next year. So can this be used to continue the resource officer program in the schools?
Well, our plan, and understand this is very, very preliminary, but we're looking at taking some of the officers in this group that would go to place them as a school resource officers. We're looking at enhancing our MESA program. Some of you, I believe, are familiar. That's making every student accountable. It's a intervention program that has been very, very successful. We have run over 100 students, and we have students that were basically dropping out of school that today are passing, and many of them are getting B's and A's and engaging in the school process.
Are we coordinating with the school district to see if there are stimulus funds that flow through the Department of Education that might be available to the school district?
We're also looking at all the things that would have a school tie or any other ties. I mean, there are other grants. The COPS grants are really straightforward.
Right. But I mean, as we talk about specific uses, I'm wondering if...
Correct.
I'm looking down the road also to ongoing obligations.
Well, the packaging of this is going to... I think that the applications that are going to be most favorably looked upon are going to be those that are very innovative, that bring partnerships together, that are very heavily into community policing. And that's our intent. We have a good history of working with the school district. In fact, the MESA program is a partnership. It's a school district and the police department working together very closely. And we would like to enhance that program. But the reality is that neither one of us has the funding to do it. We're both doing it on a shoestring. So that would be another program that we're looking at adding people to. We're looking at creating police athletic leagues to engage a lot of kids, especially in the summertime in athletics. We're looking at adding community action team officers in each of the stations, which will include bike officers and more interaction in the malls and the high traffic areas. We're looking at adding detectives to our cold homicide unit. We still have a significant number of old homicides that are unresolved that we are working through them, but we really don't have the resources to do a good job. We have to add more people to our narcotics efforts. We also need to put more people in our intelligence fusion center. So there are a lot of things that we want to accomplish, and that's what we're hoping to put this officer still.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Johan, do you want to kind of give a briefing on the opportunity we talked about the other day?
Sure. Mayor, Council, good morning. As the city manager said, there are a number of different doors through which we could access stimulus money, but one of the more obvious doors for the Arts and Culture Department is obviously the National Endowment for the Arts, which has earmarked $50 million in this effort. We very quickly identified a very specific program that they have made available to retain jobs in the arts specifically. and our curator for the Mesa Contemporary Arts very quickly turned around an application in a couple of days, which we will submit today. It is the second last one on the matrix. It's on your matrix there. It's compared to what you've just heard, these are small numbers, but for us it makes a really big difference. It'll give us the ability to extend the access to resource that we currently have that was going to be lost in June due to the reduction in workforce program. These are two staff members that are critical to the Mesa Contemporary Arts operations. We will be able to retain them for a year, or at least partly for a year, due to this grant. It's a small grant, but we qualify, and I think we're perfect for it, and I think we should get it. And it's a small example of money that'll go exactly where it's intended to go without any obligation to the city beyond the grant period. So it'll be very clear understanding that when the grant money runs out, that's the end of that program, unless, of course, we find other solutions for the problem at that time. But it gives us 12 months of additional access to resource that we don't have to lose right now.
And you'll have to explain to council, because we know that we've got a lot of needs in the arts and cultural area, but this was limited to the fact that you've received in the past certain.
Yeah, the NEA door only opens if it has been opened to you in the past 4 years. That's very limited. Only people who have received NEA money in the past 4 years can apply for this, and we have received money for the Alvin Ailey tour last year from the NEA, so we qualify.
So it's not available to the museums, for example?
No.
Let's make that point.
That's why we had to find something within the Mesa Arts Center family.
Right. Okay.
And I think these, I don't know if you plan it this way, but they bring up two great examples of the scenarios that we have. On the chief's side, we have a potential for a grant under COPS and other things to create an additional service that we then need to decide whether we're going to plan to take that on once the federal money runs out. Very worthwhile endeavor. Use federal funds to leverage our expansion of services, or not expansion, but playing catch up, with the understanding that that's a service we'd like to continue. We'll use the federal funds to jumpstart that. So we got to figure out a way to continue it on or make that decision. Whereas in Johan's case, we recognize that it's a one-time deal. We're willing to take that, but we're also willing to walk away from it at the end of the program because we recognize the duration. And I think that really sums up the decisions we're going to need to make. If we're going to take federal monies, we either need to be willing as a city to step up and continue it and budget that and recognize that either 1, 2, or 4 years down the road, we're going to have to make a tough decision,
right,
or we're going to need to be willing to walk away from it and with no regrets. Say, we got some good use out of it. We accomplished some goals. All right, it's gone. Boom, we're going to go on. And know that up front, just like you mentioned. So I think that accurately describes the situation we're in. It reminds me a lot, this whole stimulus, of a friend I had, young real estate broker back in the heydays of the 80s. And he brokered a big real estate deal, and the client was so happy he gave him a brand new Mercedes. This was like a 26, 27-year-old kid. Gave him a brand new Mercedes. And this kid was sky high. I mean, walking in the air. 27 years old, brand new Mercedes, and then the tax bill came. And then the insurance bill came. And then he had to sell the car because he couldn't afford either the taxes or the insurance. And it was devastating. And, you know, he didn't consider that, you know, there was a price that came with that ownership. And, you know, at 26, 27 years old, you don't think of those things. So a year later, at 28, 29, he learned a valuable lesson. I hope we're not caught into that we recognize this could be a one-year ride. If that's the case, let's drive the car for a year, let's enjoy it, and then let's be ready to turn it in. Or we better start saving up, as the chief said, to pay the bill, to get ready to start paying the bills for the Mercedes in a year. You know, he didn't learn that lesson. And it was real tough for him to go from the Mercedes back to his Nissan Sentra, beat up Nissan Sentra, in a year. I don't think this council wants to go through that mental thing. We need to understand right up front what we're buying into.
Mr. Mayor, if I may add a couple of things. There are additional police-related grants that will be similarly where you're going in. In fact, some of the JAG money we can use for technology is kind of a one-shot deal. There's no additional cost, and in fact, we want to leverage some of that money because some of the technology that we're looking at will provide us significant full-time equivalencies through efficiencies. But going back to the COPS grant, one of the things that I'd like to plant the seed for council is that, you know, unlike the Mercedes comparison, when you have young kids that become addicted to heroin, as we are seeing some of that use coming up, the cost of that to this community in the years to come will far exceed the investment. A young person that becomes addicted to heroin is addicted to heroin for life. I don't care what anybody tells you. It's like once you become an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic for life. The only difference is that it's a habit that is extremely expensive, and there's a tremendous cost to the community. We may not see it in the Part 1 crimes necessarily, but you're going to see it in the shelter cost, and you're going to see it in the lack of productivity and the lack of revenues. They're not contributors. They become a cost. So a lot of these things, I'd like you to start thinking of it. It is also an investment. It's an investment that a well-run community over a long period of time has to plan for.
And I'm glad you brought that up because you're right. It's not like the Mercedes. The Mercedes is a luxury. Right. And what you're talking about are basic needs that if we had the money right now, we would absolutely be investing in that area because you're right. It is a great investment. And I think that what the federal money's do hopefully is they give us that leverage and that time frame. You know, if we can plan over the next 3-4 years how to ease into it, we can shift things around and create new resources if we need to and gain other efficiencies to continue that on. But I think that the concept is we need to decide if this is important enough, and I think you made some valid points that it is important, that it's something we're willing to go through that process to do. And plan that 4 years from now, we're going to be footing the bill. Yep. And I agree with you. And when it comes to situations like that, that's probably a decision that we'll say it's worth it as long as the resources are there.
And the other thing, not to pressure, but the timeline is so short, we really don't have time for a lot of debate. You either have to fish or cut bait quickly.
Yeah, we'll probably, if it's that quick, we may, like, even next week be in front of council, let you know.
Okay.
Catherine, oh, there you are.
Hi, Mayor, Council. The timeline for us was extremely short and, in fact, came and went, and we applied for some projects last Friday was our deadline. Much of the money that will come through for water infrastructure comes through the state revolving funds under the Clean Water and the Drinking Water Acts. The state revolving fund is administered by the Water Infrastructure Finance Authority, WIFA. Traditionally, WIFA has taken projects from rural areas, communities that are disadvantaged and not well off, and offered them lower cost loans than they would otherwise be able to get through traditional means. And traditionally, because Mesa has been able to package good loans, we have not participated in WIFA. Of course, we're taking a harder look at that, and we have applied for some projects. Some of the money that will come through the state revolving funds will be in the form of very low cost loans, and even some that have what they say negative interest rates, which means you eventually pay off less than the original principal amount. There, to put this in perspective, the entire state of Arizona only got $55 million for the Drinking Water Act and $26 million for the Clean Water Act. That's not very much money, and the projects that have been identified so far total about $1 billion. So our expectations need to be reasonable on this. That being said, there were two criteria that they were looking for. One, most importantly, was this concept of being shovel ready. Their priority was for projects that could go to construction by June 17th. That's a very short time frame. But fortunately, being a big city, we have a lot of projects that are shovel-ready and they're in the process. So we focus on applying for projects that could meet that deadline. Their second criteria was really for green or sustainable or environmental-type projects. So we focused on about six projects that we felt met both criteria fairly well. And we're hopeful that we will receive some amount of money.
Catherine, I know that on the transportation side, one of the challenges is that you have shovel-ready projects, but the pool of money is so small for the statewide that everybody's shovel-ready projects are greater than probably the allocation you're going to get. So you have a let's say you have an $8 million project you could start tomorrow, but because the pool is so small, you're going to get $2 million. Is that you finding the same thing, or can we adjust to that, or what's the
Mayor, no, that's exactly what we're finding. And I've spoken with some WIFA board members, and really, yeah, they want to make this money go as far as they can. So if you have an $8 million project, you're likely not going to get $8 million, even if it's shovel-ready and environmental, but you might get some amount of money. They're trying to spread it amongst the communities, go as far as they can.
Yeah.
So
do we have projects in place, or are we having to scramble to redefine projects, or how do we
both? We have some projects that fit the time frame quite nicely and are environmental in nature. The next WIFA board meeting is going to be on the 18th, and we're hoping that they will identify projects very shortly thereafter, because for some of these projects that are shovel ready, we would actually have to go out and rebid to meet some of the strings that are attached to the federal money, such as prevailing wage rate laws, Davis-Bacon, and also some Buy American clauses. We might have to rebid one or two projects that are so shovel ready that literally the bids have gone out. The others, though, the time frame works fairly nicely.
There's a possibility that the bids have already gone out, that to get the stimulus, we may actually end up paying more than what we'd bid for as we...
I don't know that yet.
Okay.
I don't know.
Possibility, but you're not saying
it's a possibility. It's a possibility. And, of course, we would not take money if it were going to cost us more to complete the project, even with the stimulus money. So, but there are a couple of projects that we would potentially Okay.
As what happened, there may be a real case, Catherine, that may be the case. We may take the federal dollars. What the federal dollars will do is Davis-Bacon, which will mandate certain wages that have to be paid by the employers, the subcontractors on a project. That's not a requirement under any other project that we would do. So that obviously has a tendency to drive the project cost up, as it would. Some of these other provisions, Buy American, and what was the other one?
The two there that are in the WIFA is really Buy American and Davis-Bacon are the two.
What really the stimulus dollars are going to do when these kinds of, just whether it's transportation, infrastructure, a lot of these programs, because they are so needed to be done immediately, the reality is to get as far as you need to be eligible, you've already identified that project and a funding source for it, because you've committed to tremendous amount of due diligence on the project, whether it's the environmental, whether it's the engineering, design, and for some of them, we've already gone out for bid. So that's, you don't go out for bid unless you've already identified the dollars. So what it's going to allow us to do is stretch those dollars, whether they're bond fund dollars or some other capital
dollars. We'll replace
dollars.
Existing.
Right, and then we can do another.
And I was simply pointing out an anomaly that happens, and in all fairness, the purpose of the stimulus program is not lowest bidder. It's to create jobs.
Absolutely.
And therefore, I don't want to make a big deal. I was simply pointing out a simple anomaly that has now grown far beyond what I expected.
It's the lowest bidder under federal guidelines.
Under federal guidelines. And the purpose
Correct.
Of stimulus is to create jobs. And so really, that's not a situation that they would complain about, because it does fulfill some of their goals and objectives. So
yes, Mayor, absolutely.
Not made my statement.
Yes. So again, we've applied for about six projects, and we did try to focus on ones that were environmental and shovel-ready, and we're hopeful that we'll get something. But expectations do need to be fairly low on this. Again, over $1 billion that people have put in for, and, far less than $100 million available.
Thank you. You've done a fine job of driving down our expectations.
Thank you.
I'm glad Catherine did that, so I didn't have to. So.
And Mayor, are you preparing to run for office, by the way?
And Mayor, let me also mention that, and we mentioned this in one of the slides earlier about the CDBG dollars that we know are going to be allocated directly to the city or we're pretty certain they are as part of the formula. Since we are already in the midst of going through the current year process, where we've gone out and solicited from our nonprofit partners, our community partners on CDBG programs and projects, what we anticipate doing is, obviously, as is usually the case, is we get requests for a greater amount than we actually have funding for. What we really see this $900,000 will allow us to do, and this will help us, we think, kind of moving the process along further, is to fund some of those projects that we would otherwise not be able to fund this current year. So we'll be able to stretch those dollars more. And actually, we see that there's some large projects that were being proposed that we were just not able to fund through the normal process that we'll be bringing to the council. The good news is we're bringing that recommendation to the council in 2 weeks? Or next? Oh, 1st of April? Okay. What's the deadline? What's the timeline on that, Harry?
Mayor, Council, our plan is to come in April. Although we've received notification of the $919,000, we're still waiting for the other allocation from HUD, which is just our normal annual CDBG. So we're waiting for that to get that number, but hopefully we'll get that in the coming week or so, and then we'll be coming to April with a full package of what our annual number is plus the $919,000.
Thank you. Vice Mayor?
Chris, are we looking at all to refund some of the streetlight programs in neighborhoods where we were using CBDG funds for areas where lighting was very poor in older neighborhoods? Are we going to do any of that?
We could. We could certainly look at that.
I just wonder if that had been in the discussion.
You know, I don't recall. We've seen some, what we've really seen are some, and that's certainly something we could consider. Some of the projects that we've seen that we were not going to be able to fund under this current budget were a lot of projects, and that was going to be a project, but large projects related to the men's shelter and the needs that they have there for the actual facility. And so that was one area that we were looking at. So we could certainly look at the streetlights.
Which, once again, is a good example of, for example, what the chief was talking about, how an investment in one thing, which seems simply as a social service, also reaps dividends in the public safety area by allowing us a good alternative to apprehending and taking them to the jail and things like that.
Exactly.
So it's a great investment for us that reaps dividends far beyond what we pay.
And let me just mention one more program that we've been made aware of just this past week. We were contacted by the county, our human resources department was, about the opportunity for funding for teen work programs, that they would help provide for funding if we were to hire youth throughout the city, that they would help supplement that pay. So that's an area that certainly at the library and Parks and Recreation in the past we've been able to do that. A lot of those programs or those activities were being reduced under the current budget. So we're looking to work with them to try to find opportunities to employ the youth now and through the summer. So we're working with the county on that. So,
Councilmember Summers?
Scott, you already addressed the issue of the fire station construction, new construction. There's a possibility of maybe funding. We have three fire stations being constructed. One's a replacement at the airport, and then two brand new fire stations. Those two brand new fire stations are going to require crews that are going to have to... Three? Okay. The two new ones are going to require new crews. So we've already committed, our voters have committed to, they passed bonds to putting those crews into those places. They're similar to the COPS program, is a safer program that helps fund firefighters. And I see the chief standing up.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's running or coming up.
Yeah.
my question is, this is similar to the COPS program, where we may be able to have the feds fund some of the new firefighters that we could hire and defer those costs over, what, a 4 or 5 year period?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, that's essentially correct. The SAFER Act has provided a grant for probably 10 years that was designed specifically to improve staffing levels throughout cities across the country where they're under four-person staffing. So in the past, it's been very difficult for cities like Mesa to apply for that kind of grant. And again, there's matching, and then the city has to pick up the expense after that. So we're expecting that the SAFER grant is going to expand considerably to allow potentially hiring, as the Department of Justice has done it for the police department for many, many years. Police across the country have used that funding source many, many times over. That has really not been available to the fire service. So this is going to be one of the first times, and so we're going to see that evolve here very shortly. We, at this point, are only going to be adding one new fire station within our bond package that's reflective of adding staff.
19?
18. Not 19, correct.
19,
that's correct. So at this point, we're fairly limited. Now, the good news is, under the Fire Act grant, where most of those dollars are designed for capital-type projects. We are shovel-ready for, we own property. We have a whole host of locations selected. We have a set of plans that have been recently developed for Station 218 that we see as a template that we can reuse. We're obviously going to have some site adaption depending on the location, but we're very shovel-ready for at least three projects, potentially four projects by the time the dollars actually roll out.
I think that if we can pursue the SAFER Act, it allows us to, we're going to incur those costs of personnel anyway because we've agreed to put those up, so this may be an opportunity to utilize those to defer the full impact of those costs to the city three, 4 years. So that's a good use there. Also, if we can get more bang for our buck, what Councilwoman Higgins indicated off mic was that if it'd be nice. We have a shovel-ready project for 220, which is 68th and Main? 58th and Main? Oh,
yes.
Lord, it's in there somewhere, which would help serve some pretty busy areas of the central city.
Right.
So if we can save our taxpayers money and add more public safety infrastructure, I think everybody would be happy as well.
One of the things that we're really looking at for SAFER is being able to staff out our TRV program. As was mentioned, anything that's innovative, that's a little bit of a new strategy, tends to get a little more attention.
Yeah.
And so we're going to capitalize on that, or we're going to attempt to. And then another aspect that's kind of unique to FIRE is, you know, we operate regionally very close. We've been successful in the Homeland Security process, applying for regional grants that have really provided, that really put us in a position in terms of physical resources to be very ready for emergency response to mass casualty and things of that nature. We're going to look at the same sort of potential in terms of other programs that will benefit not only Mesa but our surrounding cities as well. So, and we always have seen that as a strength in the way we approach our grants, is to try to do it in a partnership.
And you bring up an interesting point there. One of the purposes of the TRV program is to allow us more flexibility, which will allow us to move into new stations maybe earlier or without the gigantic jump in commitment, because we can be more flexible in moving crews around. So hopefully we can leverage off that to those savings to get into some of these stations earlier than we might otherwise be able to if we had to completely staff them up under the traditional model.
That's correct.
Is that an accurate?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mayor and Councilmember Summers, the SAFER program is a perfect example, though, of some of the challenges or some of the opportunities and challenges and opportunities that the city manager spoke about earlier. SAFER is actually not even included in the stimulus package. DHS, Department of Homeland Security, actually wanted to supplement the stimulus program by waiving the local matches that municipalities would have to commit for the SAFER funding. So those are some of the opportunities that are popping up all around in various departments that aren't even related to the 1,000-plus page stimulus bill. It's
have those strings
initiative.
Been clipped, or are they talking about clipping them?
They have waived, Mayor and Councilmember Summers, they have waived the local match in FY09-10. It's a one-year waiving of the funds at that time, but we'll continue to monitor.
I think we need to jump on that particular opportunity. And Mayor, one more unrelated question, if I may. Mr. Did you have anything to add before I had my unrelated question? I
would add one thing, Scott, is that, and I think we mentioned it earlier, is there's a lot of moving targets in this entire stimulus package. The fire service has seen are additional dollars come through grant pipelines that have been established for years. We're anticipating, as Chris mentioned, dollars in other potential stimulus packages as they roll out, as Congress rolls them out. So this is only a kind of a first blush where we're looking at capital projects as shovel-ready types of things, but I think there's going to be a lot more opportunity roll out as we go through the next several months.
Yeah, I agree. My unrelated question is...
Can the fire chief be dismissed now?
That's up to you, Mayor.
Oh, okay.
I didn't... He just came up.
Okay. Thank you, Chief Beck.
Thanks, Chief.
Now, Councilmember Summers.
Is there any possibility of some of this money helping us out on Dial-A-Ride? It's been a recurring issue, underfunded, increase in demand, and expanding service area, and we're going to be several hundred thousand dollars short, I think, again. And this is maybe the fourth or fifth time in 2.5 years I've had the pleasure of addressing this issue. in 2.5 years, and I was curious if...
Well, Mayor and Councilmember Summers, frankly, that's one of the reasons that we pushed off the conversation about transit budget in general. It's more than a couple $100,000. Transit cost to the city, while we've been taking significant cuts, that is continuing to rise at 30-40%. And dial-ride activity is really accelerating on us. It is becoming a very difficult fiscal obligation for the city. It is putting tremendous pressure throughout the rest of the budget. We are going to try to use some one-time dollars to stopgap the entire, what could have been over $1 million hit to the city in this next fiscal year. So that's one of the reasons we've postponed the discussion today, because we really needed to go back to RPTA and try to understand, get a better understanding why those costs are increasing as dramatically as they are. And as unpopular as it may be, the dial-a-ride impact to the city continues to grow in amounts that we have not anticipated in our budget, and frankly, it is putting huge pressure on the budget. Now, I know that the dollars that we talked about in the transit
and it's allocation, federally mandated within 3/4 of a mile of our bus routes. Our bus routes are all, there's only one route we can cut, which is Gilbert Road, and that becomes a regional route in
July.
So at that point, there's no routes we really will.
No, well, and really the issue there is it doesn't change the obligation of dial-a-ride because it goes right down the middle of the city, and so the overlapping responsibilities. I know when we saw some dollars, the regional dollars on transit, the transit dollars we just talked about earlier today, would not help with that. And Mike, I don't know if you know of any other sources that might be available from an operational standpoint. And here's the problem: is this is a growing need. I mean. And this is where I want to be very careful with this conversation. I think the mayor talked about it, whether it's police officers, firefighters, or whatever it might be, suggesting that it helps that we can have these new personnel in here for the next two or three years. That's a huge balloon payment at the end of the period of time, because one, those officers are no longer new recruits. You know, after 4 or 5 years, they're advancing up. There's a long-term cost to the city. And the question is, we can get Chuck out here with his crystal ball here pretty quickly, but I don't know that we see an economic recovery in a very dramatic way over the next 5 years. We see it not even beginning, probably for another year and a half, 2 years, and then that's a slow pace. So we're going to have to be really strategic about the additional costs, the recurring costs that we're going to add into the budget. While it may not hit us for 3 years, in 4 years, in the fourth year, it'll be a dramatic increase. So,
well, and that's why I think we need to take the approach that the chief talked about. If not actually amortizing and setting aside
right
monies
now,
starting now, we at least in our thinking need to amortize the phase in.
Correct.
And start making, if this is important to us and it's important enough, because at this point in time, this isn't about adding something that's good and it's important. It's about shifting, and it's about making priorities. And this may very well be a priority that takes precedent over other priorities because of the other long-term effects and the ripple effects that
right
happen in public safety. But we need to start thinking now
right
as to that big hit that we're going to make 4 years from now, because it is a balloon payment.
Yes.
So we can either start setting aside now, or at least in our budgeting process, start anticipating now and adding in so it's amortized.
And Mayor, I like to even say it's more than a balloon, because that balloon, you balloon stay at that level,
it's
that
gift
grows.
That keeps giving.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Councilmember Kavanaugh?
Well, Mayor, to follow up on that point, your comment earlier about exploring new resources is something that is appropriate if you're looking at this, because if we deem these programs important for our community, we as a council can look at issues while they're not popular, but we still have the ability to levy a secondary property tax. We have the ability to go back to our community.
Okay, next item then.
No, we have the ability to go back to our community in several years to look at the issue of primary property tax, to look at the programs or the 100 new police officers that we may have funded through the federal funds, and ask the community, if you deem this important, to look at that. And so I think it creates opportunities for discussion. If we take the money, again, long-term, we have to look at you know, what are the pros and cons of continuing with it? What are our options?
Well, the nice thing is that we can look at it 4 years out on these kind of things. So the discussion, we can whatever that discussion is, we have time, and we need to take advantage of that time, rather than, and I think this has been one of the problems in the past, is that we wait until the year before or the month before, and then all of a sudden we're scrambling. And this gives us the opportunity to not have to scramble. We know it's coming. We see it's coming. We go into this with our eyes wide open, understanding that in however many years, whether it's 3 years, whether it's 4 years, depending on what commitment we have to make, we have that time where we can look at either budgetary or resource or a combination of the two, and we can ease into it and have that discussion with the community. And we can also target that because it's well-defined what it is that we're having to deal with. It's not some nebulous number out there. It's actually, we know exactly what we're going to be, and we can plan into it. Councilmember Fender?
The only comment I would make is, you know, you talk about 4 years out. None of us may be here in 4 years. I'm not counting months or anything, but I'd hate to obligate whoever's here, staff, us, in 4 years from now of putting them in a bad spot. So, and then being beat over the head because we obligated a future generation of elected officials, whoever. So I'm concerned.
Okay.
I was just going to mention so far to answer Councilmember Summers' question. So far, all the transit money has been focused on capital, shovel-ready construction projects that create jobs. We're going to keep monitoring the different programs that come out for operations security type situations where we can take advantage of those.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Great. And with that, Mayor, if there's any additional questions, we'd be glad to answer it. We'll come back. We'll keep you informed. Feel free. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to let us know. And beyond the money that's flowing directly to the city, I think it's important to note that a lot of our community partners, whether it be the food banks or job workforce placement centers and others, are going to have a lot of access to schools, especially have access to federal stimulus dollars. So I think the infusion of capital into Mesa can certainly be, it's going to be on a larger scale than what we are talking about necessarily coming through the municipal government. So we're hopeful that this will make an impact in the future.
Okay. Councilmember Summers has one more question.
One more thing that just came to my mind, that we had a presentation not too long ago where last week with DMA, and one of the things they were looking at was the downtown buildings and whether or not they were appropriate for adaptive reuse, because they're too large, mm-hmm. and they wanted to shrink them down. It occurred to me that if there's some kind of economic development funding that would help with dividing those buildings up, not only would that be a capital project with little to no operation and maintenance for the city, but it would also open up our downtown area for economic development, creating private sector jobs. And those are the kind of things that we should be pursuing. So that's just a comment. You don't have to reply, but just look at what kind of ED economic development issues.
Thank Absolutely. You. We'll see if there's other opportunities to facilitate such as that, Councilmember Summers. One of the areas, there's a lot of research grants associated in stimulus, billions of dollars.
Yeah, and I know, and I was just talking with Dr. Crow, which we're going to talk about in a second, that there's a lot of research grants that their ASU is targeting for Polytechnic, for example, which we certainly, as much as we can be involved in helping them, supporting them, doing whatever, would be really a great thing, be beneficial. So,
Mayor, I was just going to say, and also there's potential opportunities for entities such as the Aerospace Institute that.
Didn't I see Paul here earlier?
That we are. Mm-hmm.
I think he left. Is he still here? He's gone? Oh, okay.
But for the Aerospace Institute, there could be some seed money that could come out of some of the grants out of the Department of Energy and out of the military side of research that could be beneficial to the city as well.
Thank you very much. One of the things, there's been some talk about what other cities are doing and special strike forces and super dream teams set up. And I think that there's
this
a lot of...
It?
This is it. There's a lot of different ways to do that, and I commend you for working within our existing structure, because we have a lot of great people who work for this city, and I think you've done a good job of getting on top of things and identifying those areas where we can benefit and we can take advantage of the programs that are out there. And I'd also like to expand on one thing that was brought up earlier that Mr. Brady brought up, because it was also mentioned, Mr. Nelson mentioned in his article this morning in the Republic, which is a very important thing, is that I think we take for granted our nonprofit organizations that we have here in Mesa. I was talking to an official from another city the other day and talking about how they structure some of their CDBG and other things, and it became obvious that their nonprofit infrastructure didn't even come close to what we enjoy as far as the sophistication and the history and the involvement that our organizations such as New Leaf, Mark Center, Child Crisis, our United Way, Sunshine Acres was pointed out. There's a lot, and the list could go on and on, so please don't get offended if we didn't mention you. And we really, in this community, we have some organizations that are standard setters. Standard setters? They've set the standard. That's better. And they are at the forefront of providing these services, and we work a lot through them, and I believe they provide a very high level of service without involving some big city government department that other cities sometimes utilize. And therefore, I want to make sure that we understand that when we take advantage of these organizations, we don't think that's a step down. In many ways, that is a gigantic step up, because we do have a very sophisticated and well-established and successful social network here in Mesa that has existed for decades. So I didn't want to leave this without explaining or pointing that out, that we're really lucky to have that in Mesa. So
thank you, Mayor.
Thank you so very much. Okay, the next item on the agenda is to discuss and provide direction on letter of support of the leadership and academic programs at ASU Polytechnic campus. This is something that Councilmember Summers brought up, and we have discussed quite a bit what our support or what our discussion, I guess, and the points we want to make in regards to ASU Polytechnic. There's certainly been a lot of heated debate about educational funding in the state. There's been a lot of discussion, both at the legislature, at the Board of Regents, at the university level, and at the community level, as far as the future of ASU, of its four campuses, and how that affects Polytechnic. And I think Councilmember Summers had a great idea that we need to come out because say what we feel, because there was a lot of people who were questioning why we weren't saying more. Well, there's been a lot of work going on behind the scenes, a lot of discussions. I had a meeting with Dr. Crow last Thursday, discussed Polytechnic in detail. He reiterated his support and commitment to the mission of Polytechnic, to the future of Polytechnic. And we discussed, frankly, the realities of the ongoing financial situation and the budget and having to balance, a bunch of different constituencies at the university level, be it the students, to the faculty, to the Board of Regents, to the legislature, to the public in general. It's a very tough balancing act. And so we felt that it would be in our best interest, and it would not be inappropriate to write a letter to the Board of Regents as a formal letter of this council expressing our support for Polytechnic and for the programs that are there. We're not trying to jump into the middle of specific debates or decisions, other than to say, listen, this is important to us as a city. We want you to know it's important to us, and we want you to know that the city of Mesa has made significant investments in this campus. And I don't think people realize the level of investment that this city has made in the Gateway Airport and the Gateway area, which includes Polytechnic and basic infrastructure, streets, utilities, those kind of things. So that's the purpose of this letter. So Councilmember Summers, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I'll just mention that Dina and I, if I can call you Dina here, Councilmember Higgins and I met with Keith Gelmstead, who's the Dean of ASU Polytechnic, as well as Elizabeth Capaldi, the Provost of ASU, and had a meeting about the importance of Polytechnic. What we're concerned about is ensuring that the Polytechnic campus maintain its research-intensive focus. By having a research campus in Mesa,
that is a driver of economic development. We have seen, because of ASU, in part because of ASU Polytechnic, we have seen the Aerospace Institute express interest in coming to Mesa. So there are development opportunities around having ASU Polytechnic here. Our objective to create 100,000 high-wage jobs is based largely on having the Polytechnic campus here, and we want to be supportive of making sure that Polytechnic isn't just a collection of classrooms or an extended campus of Tempe, but rather it's its own entity, its own agency with its own departments, its own leadership there, and conducting very specific research, because that is how we're going to be able to leverage the Polytech as in our economic development efforts for all of Mesa, but certainly in the Gateway area. So we've written a letter that I think everybody has had, and if Mayor, if you are agreeable, if we could all sign it, and we'd like to send it over to President Crow for his consideration. And the letter is written in support of President Crow and the efforts to try to keep Polytechnic campus working for Mesa and the university system.
Okay, thank you. Has everyone had the opportunity to read the letter? Any questions, comments on it? Any aversion to sending out a statement of support? Okay, we'll move ahead with that then. All right, hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended.
Do you want to talk about the big one?
Vice Mayor, then Councilmember Higgins.
I'll go back a week. Last Thursday, I attended in place of the mayor the RSVP volunteer out at EVIT for all our seniors who volunteer. We had some who received presidential awards for 4,000 hours of service. Some of our volunteers were in their 90s who are utilizing their time. They're never too old to keep serving, and we have a very large service force throughout our community in all aspects of working in city departments, in hospitals, and in so many various areas, and it was nice to go and recognize a lot of those folks for the service that they do.
Great. Councilmember Higgins.
On Monday, we had over 70 people, I believe, attend the first Mesa Prayer Breakfast, where we got faith-based leaders from the community, the nonprofit community, together and discussing how we can work together to build a better Mesa.
Good. Thank you. She wins.
Continued effort.
Yeah. Councilmember Richens.
In District 1, in District 1, there was two events last Saturday. One was Lehigh Days down in Lehigh. It was probably the largest Lehigh Days event I had ever seen. There's thousands of people down there, everybody having a great time. The other was we opened up the Mesa Grande Archaeological Site for a day for tours and activities. Some of the International Baccalaureate kids put on games for the kids. It was very well attended. The Mesa Grande Community Alliance put on their annual pancake breakfast for the event, fed over 500 people, and 450 people, I was told, went on tours of the site, and Jerry Howard of our museum led many of those tours, said he saw a lot of new faces, people that had never been to the archaeological site before, and it was a really, really great event, and I appreciate all the support that city staff and the community put in doing this now annual event. So, thanks.
Good. A couple events. Last Saturday, I had the opportunity with Councilmember Higgins to attend the grand opening or the ribbon cutting of a new very high-tech paint facility at Falcon Field, which was very impressive, and I mean it's state-of-the-art. And while it may seem like a small thing, having these kind of base industries at an airport are extremely important because they literally draw in from a regional basis the business and other pilots and aircraft owners and things like that. So that was an exciting thing, and that has been a good exercise for both the developer and the city, and we're working hard on learning from those experiences. because there were some unique challenges that were placed in that development. We're trying to use those to use those challenges to get bigger and better in how we deal with things. And then, is there an election this week? I think there was. I would just like to take this opportunity to thank all the citizens of Mesa and everyone who participated in this endeavor. This is the beginning of something I think very significant. Councilmember Summers mentioned the Gateway area, and we've mentioned now Falcon Field. We've mentioned Northwest Mesa. In a couple of weeks, we have a significant investment. Councilmember Kavanaugh and I are going to have the opportunity of celebrating out at the Fiesta Mall area. There's a lot of exciting things going on in this community right now. And, you know, these are just the beginning of things that are going to happen. So, you know, while it was a significant event, the election, it once again was the beginning of some great things that I think we're going to see in all parts of our community. So thanks to all the citizens for their support. We are, I mean, I am at least humbled by the challenge. When you get that much support, you know, now we need to perform. And I think that with the things we've heard today and a lot of efforts from a lot of different people, you're going to see some great things in this community. And that's exciting. So thank you to all for all that you've done recently and will continue to do. Appreciate it. Vice Mayor.
I'm going to jump in here, too, and I want to say thank you to the mayor for being so friendly with the business community, being up front and working on these issues, because a lot of it has to do with the face that we put on, and you're the face of the city, and it's paying dividends. I want to thank you personally.
Thank you very much. And you look at this face, if this is the face of the city, we're in trouble.
But thank all right, that was only figuratively.
Oh, okay, figuratively. Thank you for clarifying that. No, thank you very much. It's really an honor and a privilege to play that role. So, okay, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just remind the council that we'll have another study session on March 19th, and then our next council meeting will be Monday, March 23rd, which will be preceded by a public safety committee meeting at 3:30. And also, just we'll go ahead and put on everybody's calendar, District 3, Councilmember Kavanaugh will be having a pancake breakfast on March 28th at Station 204, which is 1426 South Extension.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I believe next week is spring break in the Mesa schools. Is Gilbert this week or?
Next.
They're next week also?
Mm-hmm.
Gilbert's next week.
Okay, so both Mesa and Mesa,
yeah.
Oh, usually they're not the same week. Please, everyone, be safe. I know a lot of people go out of town, but please be safe and hope to see you back the week after that. Ms. Carter, do we have any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. Have a movement to adjourn. Have a motion to adjourn.
Second.
A second. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.